Welcome to Guitar Serious Fun, a podcast dedicated to enhancing your guitar journey as you offer your gifts to the Lord. I'm David Harsh, and today I'm coming to you totally unscripted as we talk about the art of improvisation. Now, I had a conversation recently with someone who encouraged me to try doing some things without necessarily planning every aspect of them out. This is very much contrary to my nature. I love to have a plan. I love to have a scope. I love to have an arc of thought, even as I approach the podcasts that you've experienced here at Guitar Serious Fun. Part of the reason for that is to honor your time as a listener, because I really want to choose my words carefully, to offer a succinct thought, and to give you some specific bullets that you can remember and apply to your music and guitar journey. Having said that, I do see the value in an organic conversation where we just move in the moment to get a feel for where the Lord might be leading us and just track with various thoughts that are offered, especially when I've hosted guests on this podcast. One guest in particular whom I very much admire is Erin Pekinas. She and Mo Higgins host their own podcast, which is called Hauling Off. And I've hosted Erin 3 times here. And in one of those episodes, Mo actually made a special unexpected appearance because she just literally happened to be walking by. Their approach to their podcast is literally to take things unscripted. They have a topic, they have something that they're focusing on, but the rest of the time they are just kind of going off the cuff, or literally hauling off, as they would say. That is not the way my mind seems to be wired. I tend to want to be very structured in my approach and very administratively creative, but within a framework. And that's, as I've begun to understand it, a little unusual for those of us in the creative arts. A lot of creativity happens in more of an extemporaneous and color outside the lines sort of approach. I was literally thinking of John Mayer's song No Such Thing this morning, where the pre-chorus to the first chorus says, they love to tell you, stay inside the lines, but something's better on the other side. And it's this whole idea of, hey, color outside the lines a little bit and see what happens. So it's this idea of improvisation that I kind of want to use as my pivot point to anchor this episode today, because I'm literally improvising what I share with you. Now, what is improvisation? Well, it could be anything. You could literally improvise as you cook. Several years ago, I had the privilege of taking a class through the Post Alley Theater Sports Unexpected Productions down by Pike Place Market, and their whole approach when they do theater sports is improvisational theater. You may have seen the show on Comedy Central that's been running for many years. I don't know if it's still on, but it's called Whose Line Is It Anyway? They provide a topic or a style or a prop or something to kind of guide the situation, and then they'll take audience suggestions for where to go. But the rest is up to the actors, who literally jump right in and begin a dialogue. Now, that's a way of improvising with a discussion or a presentation, but as you can probably imagine, improvisation happens with music. Which genres use improvisation? Well, I think a lot of them do. I don't typically think of classical music as an improvisation, but I'm sure there are aspects of the theme and variation of a song form where a composer would allow someone to take gentle liberties. But the genre that I think most incorporates improvisation is jazz. In fact, I think it really hangs on that approach, where someone has a specific chord progression over which they would improvise a melody, and sometimes syllables. You think of someone who sings the scat solos that are like, I literally just improvised that. That's kind of a minor pentatonic thing, but like maybe a saxophone player. Jeff Sandberg is a good friend of mine, and he is highly gifted at improvisation with sax, not just in jazz, but in other genres. So when he and I have created a concert set where I've put together my songs, he has graciously and very elegantly come alongside the songs that I've written, with which he is very familiar, and created on the spot some melodic fragments with his sax that just fill in the gaps when I'm not singing. He kind of plays through the windows. So I would say folk pop music, which is kind of the genre that I spend the most time in, could also be another area where improvisation could happen. There are a lot of different ways that improvisation can be brought forth. Typically, it's with melodies. Typically, it's not necessarily with words, although there have been times when I've introduced myself in a concert setting and I'm strumming to welcome the congregation or the audience to the concert, and I'm literally just strumming along and I start singing things like, well, good evening and welcome to this concert at Billy Bob's Baptist Church. If you're excited to be here, let me hear you make a little noise right now. You know, and I have this conversation with the audience and they applaud, and it's very electric and energizing and engaging as they feel the spontaneous nature. Now, I believe spontaneity works best within a form. So if I'm going to create a concert set list, I'm going to work with a form, but then move between the songs with spoken dialogue and narration and anecdotes and feed off the audience with appropriate humor, which might result in their enjoying the concert even more as I am spontaneously responding to something that someone shouted out or said, you know. I love that spontaneity. When I lead worship, I'm a little bit less spontaneous because I really don't want to distract anyone from the worship experience. I want them to engage with the Lord. But nevertheless, I really like to be human up front and just be transparent and real. I know that some church worship formats involve more of a liturgical, scripted approach. I've been to churches where literally everything that is said from the front is read from either a book or a template or something that's printed out, and I do appreciate that. Some of the elders in our church will read their prayers as they guide the congregation. It's a very deliberate approach. There can be a mentality in today's worship arenas where people say, well, listen, if you read it out loud, or if it's memorized or prepared, whatever you say, it's not authentic. And I want to take a little bit of issue with that, because authenticity does not necessarily have to be tied to the delivery or the manner in which something is offered. And I'll offer a case in point reason for this. I was leading worship at a church, and I came in with a very clear vision for what I wanted to say going into a song as I led the congregation. And there was a worship team coach who was brought in to evaluate me and another worship leader. And the other worship leader was much less scripted and much more kind of off the cuff. And he seemed a little bit less deliberate because he didn't know what he was going to say as he took the mic. And that just didn't feel like natural for me, because he was just kind of going for it. Now, there were some people in the discussion that followed, including that worship team coach, who thought that that worship leader's approach was more authentic than mine. But I really want to give appreciation to a technician who came to my aid and to my defense in that conversation. He said, listen, this guy over here was being authentic because he was in the moment, but I need you to understand that David's preparation and his execution, even though it sounded more polished, that was David's authenticity. So David was being authentic as he offered his thoughts in a much more prepared fashion. So someone might say that if a song is notated, it's not as authentic. But again, if it was written in a moment of inspiration and maybe even distilled and revised and finalized, I think that could be a very authentic offering. If something is improvised, that can also be authentic. It's just a different approach to music. Now, think about this for a moment. When we have conversations with people, and generally the conversations are not super planned or structured, I'm talking about a casual conversation with a friend, a loved one, a family member, dinner time conversation, conversation with someone when we go to pick our kids up at school and we're just chatting in the parking lot while we're waiting, those conversations are typically not scripted. We aren't literally pulling out a tablet or a printed packet and saying, okay, I'm going to read my lines and now you read your lines. That would actually seem a little strange. Okay, so that conversation is taking place, and likely it's uplifting, most conversations of that nature can be. You can also have conversations where you're trying to resolve an issue or in a debate or whatever. But regardless, you are engaging in a conversation that is not scripted. But nevertheless, you are speaking words in an existing vocabulary in a language that you know. I'm going to say that again. You are speaking words in an existing vocabulary in a language that you know. So it's not like I suddenly decided I wanted to speak, I don't know, Hungarian or something. That conversation was still going to be in English, which is my native tongue. And I was using words that I knew. And I would argue that the more elaborate my vocabulary is, the more I can summon various words to articulate what I'm trying to convey. Think about a simple greeting for a moment. Like if I say, hello, or hey, or what's up, or how's it going? Those are four various types of greetings that range in their formality, but they all basically say the same thing. They need to be chosen based on context. So if I'm going to greet the headmaster of our school, I'm not going to say, hey, what's up? I'm typically going to say, good afternoon. Something a little bit more respectful and formal. Now, if I'm going to greet my kids, I might say, hey, how's it going? Which doesn't necessarily have to be formal. The key is context. When I think about the word context, I think about the etymology of it. Con is a root that means with. So like con, like confide, means with faith, like you confide with someone, or you have confidence, you proceed with faith, right? Or, I don't know, the word con can also mean like, in Spanish, con, like chile con carne, which is like chili with meat, right? The other side of the word context is text, which it derives from woven. So text could be used in the word textile, like things that are woven together. So if you think of the word context, it means things that are woven together. We can apply this to a chord progression. Okay, so if I know all the chords in the key of C, then I know that the chords are C major, D minor, E minor, F major, G major, A minor, and B diminished. So those are the seven chords in the key of C. I typically only use six of them, C, D minor, E minor, F, G, and A minor. I don't typically use the B diminished chord, but it's good to know the whole picture. Each of those chords finds its context in the key, kind of like my house finds its context in our neighborhood. The C chord, which is the tonic, the home chord, is the pivot point from which all the other chords find their orientation, at least in the key of C major. Now, if we're going to in the key of A minor, that's the home chord. And then we can go even further into modes. D Dorian, E Phrygian, F Lydian, G Mixolydian. Already talked about A minor, which is A Aeolian. You could do B Locrian, but that's much less common because it's very unstable. But when I think about modes, that makes me think of generally jazz music. A lot of jazz modes are played over specific chord progressions. So you look at the chord progressions, and then you play that scale, or more likely that improvised melody, over the modal chord progression. Now, we have a variety of guest experts who grace the digital stage at Guitar Success for You. There are eight experts that have basically graciously allowed me to capture interviews with them where we talk, but then a lot of us play music together, and some of that is improvised. One expert I'm thinking of in particular is musician, composer, highly published artist who actually happens to be a student of astronomy as well. His name is Ron Mallory. Interesting side note, Ron has a touring ministry offering called Ad Astra, which is Latin for to the stars, where he has this huge inflatable planetarium that he takes around to schools and churches, and he brings people inside this thing where people can look up and see the stars as he talks all about constellations. It's amazing. But when Ron was in our interview, which we called Guitar Plus 88 Keys, he graciously improvised and collaborated with me when I created a song form progression, and then he would just play piano keyboard over the top of that. Here's the key. Ron can read music. He can write music. He has a deep understanding of the circle of fifths. He is very, very adept at his instrument, and so his vocabulary is quite extensive. But when asked to improvise, he can pull from that vocabulary and create sounds, melodies, chords with great ease. Now, a lot of those chords and melodies that he has put together and played with me, he has openly admitted are things that he's used in other settings. So in other words, he's not completely ex nihilo out of nothing creating music when he collaborates with me. His fingers remember in certain keys where to go and which notes work well with each other, which little fragments work well with each other. So it's very much like a language. If I'm having a conversation with someone and they want to talk about, I don't know, classic cars, I don't have a lot of vocabulary in that arena, but I do know that my father really appreciates the 57 Chevy, and he can, you know, notice it a mile away. If we want to talk about food, I can talk about some of my favorite restaurants. I love shawarma from Lebanese restaurants. There's a Mediterranean kitchen in our area that makes the best shawarma. So, I don't know. There's various topics that could come up that I could say, you know what, I think I could speak to that. But here's something else very important. If I'm engaging in a conversation, what's probably the most important social skill I can demonstrate so that I can speak well into that conversation? I'll give you a second to think about it. It's listening. We as musicians, when we listen well, can play and contribute much more elegantly. If I'm not listening to the conversation, if I'm not aware of what the other bandmates are doing with their various sonorities, rhythms, how rich or dense the texture is, and I just play because I'm there, I'm not a good conversationalist. The best analogy I could think of is if someone important to me came to me and wanted to talk to me, and they were trying to tell me something, and I literally ignored them, waiting until I could just speak, that would not honor them, but B, it would also not create a very rich conversation because I would not be in the moment. So when I think about musical collaboration and improvisation, I think it's super important to know the context, to know the chords, the key, the harmonic rhythm, which is the rate at which the chords change, the groove, the style, and then I need to know my instrument. And in this case, it's the guitar, because we're here at Guitar Serious Fun, right? I need to know my instrument well enough to be able to contribute well to that musical conversation, but I really need to listen to what anyone else in that conversation is offering so that I can respond to them. So I think it's great when someone offers a musical idea and someone else responds in kind. They could echo that idea, or they could expand upon that idea. There's a song called Jack Kerouac on Brooke Fraser's album Flags, where toward the end of the song, she basically improvises a vocal solo, and the electric guitar, playing this nice clean tone electric, literally copies her, but adds just a slight bit of nuance to what she has done. But it's clearly a call and response. She does this, and this guy goes, there's a slight variation to what he does. He's still playing mostly the same notes. So he's clearly in the conversation, but he's also adding his unique spin on the musical fragment, which is really kind of cool to listen. It's very fun. It's very uplifting, and it's highly, highly musical. And this guitarist clearly knows his instrument. So I just love this idea of being in the moment, knowing the context, listening well, and having the ability to speak well as a musical conversationalist. And again, I'm not typically going to be making up words on a song. I'm typically going to be making up melodies and chords. And let me just be totally transparent with you and just say that I have not sharpened my skills well in the arena of improvisation. Part of that is because the style that I play in does not lend itself to a lot of improvisatory offerings. I'm a singer-songwriter, guitar player, and I'm typically the solo artist on the platform. So my improvisation happens between the songs. But when it comes to musical improvisation, what is the best way for us to develop our chops? Well, just thinking improvisationally here, I would say do a lot of listening. Listen to a lot of different musical styles. And something better than listening to a style of music is actually playing something from that style. Learning a fragment of, or ideally an entire song by an artist you want to emulate. I've talked about this in previous episodes, but My father's favorite artist is Harry Chapin, and it was one thing to grow up listening to Harry, but another thing entirely to put together a concert of 11 of Harry's songs to play for my father's 60th birthday. He shared with me that that was the most amazing and appreciated birthday gift he had ever received. I have to tell you that it was a very difficult thing to prepare, but it was a labor of love. Harry Chapin's music is among the most complex in terms of song forms, and 9 of the songs I played on the guitar, 1 I played on the keyboard because it was more of a piano song, and then the other was a banjo song. So to create a little bit of variety, I went between those instruments. But I have to tell you, I played the entire concert memorized. And by the way, I much prefer watching a performer not staring at a music stand when he or she is presenting a concert. I love it when the music is memorized. It feels much more relational. There's less of a visual barrier with the music stand not between me and the audience, or the audience and the performer in this case. But the more I studied Harry's music, the more I memorized it. I had a little song sheet of his stuff that I would glance at as I pushed my 1.5-year-old daughter along in a stroller through our neighborhood. I would just internalize and memorize Harry's music. I'd listen to it. That became an exercise in learning Harry's music, but also being influenced by him. So his articulations on the guitar influenced some of my artistic stylings. I would say be careful if you're going to learn someone's music that you don't necessarily want to have influence you. Obviously, it's best to spend time playing music that is most suitable to your genre, although somebody might listen to that and push back and say, hey, learn to play a lot of different styles. Why limit yourself to the flavors that you could be exposed to? Learn to play a lot of different styles. Well, I definitely want to support that viewpoint as well. But playing these various songs, developing these various fragments, that can definitely lend itself to expanding your musical vocabulary so that when the time comes for you to engage in a musical conversation, whether you're in a worship band, a cover band, or you're just doing a jam session with somebody in an informal setting, you can summon some musical vocabulary that would edify the song offering. Now, I am much more of a rhythm guitarist. I'm much less of a lead guitarist. Lead guitarists will typically play individual notes or intervals and play melodic fragments. But here's where I don't get a pass. I like to use looping technology. So I will literally create a chord progression and press record with my looping pedal on the floor and then start stacking layers. Now I can create a rhythmic loop, in other words, a chord progression, and then play some rhythms on my guitar. But it is often nice to play a melodic solo over that chord progression. And truth be told, typically when I do that, I've already planned out which solo I'm going to play. It might look improvised, but it's actually very much planned out because I don't want to make a mistake. But if I want to sharpen my chops as a lead guitarist, it would behoove me to really know my scales and my modes and my arpeggios and maybe even some harmonic intervals, like be able to play harmonic thirds and harmonic sixths, and in some styles people like to play octaves. When you listen to a masterful lead guitarist, he or she is typically able to do any and all of what I've just mentioned and more, because they have to think, well, what would work in this moment? Now, you can improvise with very low pressure in your home practice space. You can literally turn on the radio, play through something through Spotify or Amazon Music or something like that, or pop in a CD if you have CDs, and listen to a song that you appreciate and figure out, okay, what key is this in? And what are some of the chords? Do you have to analyze every single chord? No. But you can listen through to it and go, okay, I see where this artist is going, and then pick up your guitar and say, okay, I'm going to strum some of these chords, and then depending on your level of skill and knowledge of scales, maybe play a scale fragment. Maybe play just up and down. Maybe skip some notes. Maybe create some sort of melodic fragment. Or maybe even try to play along with the singer's melody. Is that prohibited? No, you can play the melody of the singer if that helps. But do something to engage with that recording in your practice space where no one else is listening, and just enjoy the process. Enjoy getting comfortable with the song. Enjoy getting comfortable with your instrument in that context. Sometimes we can use technology to slow the song down if that would help. But ultimately, just being in the moment there is great. Is it appropriate to improvise on the worship platform on a song that you've never improvised on before? Well, you're taking a bit of a risk. And I've heard it happen where someone is jumping into the mix, but they're not fully aware of what they're doing, and they play some wrong notes, and those wrong notes are ringing out for all to hear. So it's a little bit less optimal to just immerse ourselves, you know, cold turkey in a live exercise in front of an audience. I think it's much better to kind of test the waters. But there I am again talking about having a plan and having a strategy. Sometimes it's good to just jump into the mix and see what happens. I would say maybe split the difference and try jamming with someone, or maybe coming to worship rehearsal, respecting the worship leader's vision, of course, but trying a few things in that exercise with other musicians, which will allow you to have their input. They may offer a thought like, hey, I really appreciated the way you played that fragment after chorus one before we went into verse two. Or, hey, could you play that an octave higher? That way you're not interfering with the keyboard player. Or, you know, just different things that can happen. I am much more planned out with my singing, but I will say that there was a time when I was invited to support in worship with someone who hosted a morning of worship, and they wanted me to just sing, not play guitar. Guitar was already covered. They said, hey, would you just sing some harmonies on this song? But they didn't say that to me in advance. There was no email communication about it. It was literally at the one and only rehearsal for that, the one and only run through. And I'm like, so you literally want me to improvise like vocal harmony on this? And he said, yeah, I'm sure you can do it. Well, because he nudged me to do that, I was able to summon a great vocal harmony. And it wasn't just parallel. I did some pedal tones that allowed for some unique contours. So that was a good exercise where someone just kind of challenged me to do that. I sing with my daughter a lot of times out on tour dates, and she will sing a lovely harmony above me. And sometimes we incorporate worship songs. And I recall one worship song where we were singing together. It was Battle Belongs by Phil Wickham, and she had a great harmony line that she had crafted above my vocal line. Well, within a matter of months, and it was just a few weeks ago now, I was invited to play rhythm guitar on that song as a female vocalist led that song. And we ended up singing in a totally different key. I was able to accommodate that with my guitar, but she invited me to sing harmonies. And guess what I did? I think you'll track with me here on this. I literally flipped my daughter's harmony that was above me to be below the female worship leader in this instance. So I was able to sing the same harmony, and the Lord blessed me with the intuition to be able to sing the same notes down an octave, and they perfectly complemented what the worship leader was doing. And the worship leader was like, that sounds great. I'm like, that's my daughter's harmony, but thank you. I'm borrowing it. So I was able to adapt in that setting. What happens if you're dropped into the mix with a song and you're like, I don't really know what to do here? I would say make big mistakes. Sonia Saar is the choir director for our daughter's school, and she actually asks singers in the choir to make really big mistakes and to sing out loud pretty boldly in the early stages of developing the songs in rehearsal. Why would she want to hear wrong notes? So she can identify them and correct them. Because if someone's singing softly incorrectly, and then we get all the way up to the choir concert, and they have been singing the wrong notes, and then they sing a little bit louder, that actually is going to make the musical offering as a whole less quality. So she'd rather they make mistakes. So I would submit to you that part of our improvisational process would be to make mistakes and go, well, wait a second, that doesn't sound right. How can I fix that? I think it's so important to use our ears not just to listen to other people, but to listen to ourselves in the context of our musical collaborations. Our ears are our most valuable instruments as musicians. We need to listen to the music that we and others are playing. I went to a music conference in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was probably 16 years ago. Yeah, it was 16 years ago. And the clinician for one of the workshops talked about theory, which was great. I love theory. And he talked about singing with the harmony and singing against the harmony. He used examples like the Beatles, where certain notes were not necessarily consonant with the chord. They were dissonant and were able to resolve. And it was a brilliant discussion. But here's the issue that I took with that hour-long workshop. Not a single note was played, and not a single note was sung. So although the musicians who were in that class walked out with some good discussion points, nobody heard any examples of anything musically. And perhaps that individual didn't want to violate copyrights by playing other people's music, which I don't know if that was the case. even something made up could have improvised and provided some practical examples, but not a single note was played. I was mystified. I didn't take the time to talk to the teacher. It just didn't seem like the right moment. But I was mystified as to why someone would offer a class on songwriting where there was literally no discussion of practical examples or demonstration of practical examples. I was blown away. So I think so much of it is playing music, listening to music, and discussing, hey, why does this work? Why doesn't it work? So my hope is that some of the things that I've improvised for you today in my discussion about the art of improvisation have been helpful to you, and maybe give me some feedback, maybe offer a comment, or maybe share this episode with someone, because this is me just putting myself out there, taking the cue from someone who encouraged me to go into an episode without a game plan and to just kind of wing it. I am grateful for the points that I've been prompted by the Lord to share with you. I'm grateful for this discussion, but I'm also grateful for the episodes that I've offered that have been a little bit more scripted, because they have been able to hone in on very specific things. So maybe go back and listen to some previous episodes of Guitar Serious Fun and look at some of those topics. One of them is a dual episode, episodes 49 and 50, I think. It's called The 10 Fears We Face as Guitarists. Part of why this episode came together is because I had confided in this individual that I, in a lot of ways, tend to live in fear. And he said, well, part of that might be because you always like to have a plan. Maybe try a low-risk exercise where you are not going in with a plan and just kind of see how that goes. See what kind of opportunities may result from doing that. And I'll have you know that this episode is probably the first result of me going in without a plan. So I appreciate this opportunity, and I hope you have too. Thanks again for listening to Guitar Serious Fun. One of the things I mentioned briefly is Guitar Success for You. That is our wonderful, one-of-a-kind online offering where Christian guitar players who are beginners or intermediates can grow in their knowledge of guitar and music. And one of the things I like to say is that music is a language, guitar is a dialect, and I'm here to help you expand your vocabulary. And as has already been stated and encouraged, the wider our usable vocabulary, the more elegant we can be as we speak and interact with other musicians. So if you are looking for a way to grow as a guitarist and a musician for the glory of God, and you're looking for a curated collection of very, very relevant topics and concepts, but also a collection of guest expert interviews that literally represent hundreds of years of cumulative knowledge, but also a community element that incorporates weekly Zoom calls where you can literally connect with people in multiple time zones and talk about kingdom-related stuff and practical stuff, you've just found it. Guitar Success for You is that place. So I'm going to give you the website. It's guitarsuccessforyou.com. That's Guitar Success, the number 4, and the letter U.com. I highly encourage you to check it out. We've got a new Guitar Web Masterclass called the Guitar Success Formula that we have labored over for months and months, almost years really, to help you get a better sense of what we do, but also to provide some incredible value that could really enhance your guitar and musical journey as well. So please check that out. You will be able to link to it from the website, but I'll also give you that unique URL, which I highly recommend watching on a browser, not a smartphone. The Guitar Success for You Guitar Success Formula is guitarsuccessforyou.com/formula, which makes sense, right? So thank you for taking time with me today. I hope this has been enriching to you. I don't know if I'll do more improvised episodes of this nature. We are narrowing down our times in these episodes, and we're narrowing down the frequency of these episodes as I move more toward YouTube and Instagram, but I'm nevertheless going to keep things going intermittently here, probably moving toward monthly episodes or couple episodes a month. But I do love doing this longer form content. So I value your feedback. We also value your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, because the more positive feedback you offer for us, the more exposure we can get and the more we can share these insights. So thank you for taking the time, and I look forward to next time.